Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
In which you play an announcer who totally, a baseball announcer, major league or minor league, who totally melts down, right? Because I've seen the opening trailer.
Yeah, he's Jim Brockmire. He's a guy who talks like this, only kind of the old school sort of, to me anyway, the sort of generic 1970s announcer voice, not just for baseball, but... You know, this is the guy who sold you the Ginsu also. I don't know why.
It's fantastic. You sound like John Miller. It's fantastic.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
All right, you can hear it in my voice. I'm done. I don't have a voice.
Have a good day, folks.
Plausibly live from an as-yet undisclosed third-floor location in Chevy Chase, Maryland. We're on the air with Chris Ciliza and Gary Braun and Michael Kornheiser. Nigel is here to run the board and do the news. Later in the show, we will have Ann Hornaday and we will have Abby Lowell. I'm going to apologize now, not overnight, but sometime around yesterday in the mid-morning, I started coughing and I haven't stopped, and my throat is really sore. I do not feel bad other than that, but I was going to take tomorrow off anyway. We were not going to have a show tomorrow, and now I'm going to do it for personal and health reasons. Because I sound so awful. We're not going to go through this. Let me plug a couple of things before we get into the show. My friend Brent Glass, who has written a book, 50 Great American Places, and has been on this show to talk about it. And Brent was the director of the American History Museum in the Smithsonian Complex for, a decade or so. On Saturday at 1 p.m. at the Georgetown Library at 3260 R Street, the Georgetown Library, Brent is going to talk about his book, and he will be great. And his voice will be better than mine, so I want you to do that. I had another thing to say before we get to Chuck and Sheena Parveen, which I know everybody is waiting for. The weather in town and Chuck and Sheena Parveen, Chuck Bell. So yesterday, I walk into the PTI show, and I get there at about, quarter to two or something like that, 1:30, quarter to two, hours before Wilbon. And sitting on Wilbon's desk is a box from TaylorMade. And I'm looking at it and looking at it and looking at it. And I can't wait for Wilbon to get in.
He's not going
to
miss this.
So I can say, well, what do you got? You have like a set of irons? What's in the box?
Right.
And he opens a box.
It's an iron. That sort of box?
Like a
big
one?
So you could have golf clubs in it?
Well, it was a big box. Okay. I didn't know what was in it.
Might a box.
And so he opens it, and it's that brand new M1 driver, right? That they call the M1, Michael?
The M1 family, yeah.
The M1 driver. That you see Dustin Johnson is hitting 390 yards. And so I say to Wilbon, you know anybody at TaylorMade? And he goes, no. And because I'm looking at my desk, there's no club.
Wow.
No club. Mm.
And don't we know Michael Valenzuela?
Don't we?
Don't we know him? Wasn't he at TaylorMade for years? Am I wrong about this? You're looking at me.
I don't remember Michael Valenzuela. But
well, that's probably the problem.
Who's we?
Maybe I'm having the name wrong.
Got a turd in your pocket?
Because he did the rocket ball driver. He got me a rocket ball.
So just go get one. It's $500.
I understand that. That's not the point.
Just the one.
It's not the point. Why did Wilbon get that?
I don't know.
Why did he get that?
So you didn't do PTI after that, right?
I did it. Well, I mean, I swallowed my pride.
With that kind of slap in the face?
I swallowed my pride and I did the show, but I just, Okay, so let's get to weather wherever you are. I know that you are sometimes interested in Washington weather. I know that we have suffered without Kip Scheman. There's no question we've suffered because he would have prepped us for everything that was going to happen this morning and tonight.
And not going to happen.
And he would have said we're going to get 5 inches.
Well, maybe. We don't know exactly.
It's a range of -3 to -27 inches.
We don't know. We don't know what he would have said, but everybody thought, and the preparation was, not for a lot of snow here, for heavy, wet snow that would not necessarily stick on the ground that might be 1 to 3 inches. There's nothing. I don't know if there'll be something later in the day, but in the period of time when it was supposed to accumulate, there's absolutely nothing. And yet, if you go 90 miles north of here on 95, and you get into the Philadelphia suburbs at that point, you're getting 6 inches today. You go 90 miles north of that into New York City, and you're getting a foot of snow, and all the way up Providence, Hartford, Boston, a foot of snow.
My parents in Hartford, I think 15, 18 inches is the
If you're on the tip of Long Island, it could on Montauk Point, it could be 18 inches.
Oof.
So we got incredibly
lucky.
Were those
lucky. Places as warm as it was here yesterday? Because I heard you they yesterday opining on this. And
they
I think
said on
correct.
The Today Show that they were wearing, in Central Park, shorts and T-shirts.
I don't think it was, okay. it was
as
72
warm here.
I think it was in the, I think, I looked, I always look at Connecticut because where I'm from. I think it was like 66 or something, but it was warm.
Yeah, those surfaces, you would think roads under that heat, they're just going to hold so much heat that you're not going to get any.
Well, they're getting crushed.
But if you look at the pictures, the roads are all
covered.
Yeah.
Covered with snow, nowhere to go now. New York's a lonely town when you're the only surfer boy around. For those of you who remember that song.
It was snowing. Now I live in sort of upper Montgomery County. Yeah. It was snowing moderately when I left this morning. Yeah. I don't want to say accumulating, but it was gathering on the grassy surfaces.
We had a couple of flakes.
That's it.
That's it in upper northwest Washington, D.C.
I'm west of the undisclosed location, which you would think north and west is where they said might get some.
Because of the wraparound effect, as Kip would say.
Absolutely nothing.
Nothing.
I mean, when I walked outside this morning, it was snowing.
Oh,
there was actual
right.
snow yeah. mixed in. But it wasn't not even on the.
Is there a chance that this is it?
For this? You mean for the whole year?
No, I mean for the winter?
No, I wouldn't say
something
that.
Something in March or later this month?
Yeah,
or?
Well, the next 10 days don't look like they can sustain a snowfall. So, which would be great as far as I'm concerned. In any case, so I tuned in to Channel 4 really early in the morning.
Storm
they
Team
were going
4.
At 4. They were going at 4 a.m.
Well, you're part of Storm Team 4 Nation.
Yes.
So they were going at 4 a.m. I didn't get them at 4 a.m., though. I did not sleep at all because of this cough. But around 5, I tune in. And it is now, it's not just Chuck Bell. It is Chuck and Sheena.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a duo now. That Sheena Parveen, she has taken over. And here is my...
It's 28-3.
Yeah. Well, so you're not going to go to sleep for the second half.
Yeah. Well,
so you think Chuck Bell's going to make a comeback? Because here's where I think Chuck Bell's going to end up. In the Storm Team 4x4 on a lonely road going up to Gaithersburg.
Or La Plata.
Chuck, we need you out of the field.
There's an inch and a half of snow and only, I'm happy to report.
Yeah.
Well, can DC hold her? Maybe is she too hot?
I told you. I think that's a Today Show eventually.
Two years, we think?
Yeah, I think that's a
Today
Show.
2 years should be on the
Today Show.
That's
a Today Show.
Yeah, I'm just telling you. I see Chuck Bell in the near future in the 4x4 from whence he came four or five years ago.
Right.
You know, he's broadcasting.
So Chuck, have you thought about sports? Would you like to maybe do some?
See, I think she moves into the afternoon.
Pretty sure
I think Amelia Draper has more to worry about.
Really?
Yeah. I think Sheena can quickly graduate the morning weather and go into the 5 o'clock.
But
is that better?
Because
the morning weather is when people prep for the day. The loyal following is in the morning, I would thought. No?
I think within the hierarchy there, afternoon's better.
Huh.
Well, also, does Sheena want to get up at 3:15?
I'm just going to say this, that they take pictures in Channel 4, it appears to be on a regular basis, in which they assemble all the weather people.
Right, right.
And there appears to be a definite spot, a hierarchical spot, where people stand and where they are.
It's how they orchestrate around Doug Camera.
Right.
Doug Camera is
the
son.
Standing at Doug's left shoulder is number one, right?
He's the big cheese, Doug Camera.
Head honcho.
At one point, when Sheena Parveen first started, and we're only talking a month now, when she first started, she was in the deep back. She's up front now.
Yeah.
She's right on Doug Camera's left side.
We call that
side.
The Kornheiser effect.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
The left
I'm just
is
saying.
The power position. Anyone to the left of the number one guy
I believe it's who's seated to the right and the younger.
Well, she's
people.
On the right as you watch the screen, but it's actually Doug Camera's left side.
I mean, if you're sitting around a table, the
hero
power
left.
Position is to the man's right.
We call that hero left.
I don't think that's right.
Okay.
Michael, your thoughts on hero left and right?
I'm going to stay out of this one.
Michael's take is that the
I
man
think everyone
to
listening
the man
knows where I'm sitting. Let's leave it at that.
Let's get to the undeniable lead story of the day. Anybody
across.
Who watched television knows that whatever else happened yesterday in sports, the lead story of the day is the Charles Oakley meltdown.
Holy cow.
What does anybody want to explain, Chris? You see?
So there's the great thing about there are many terrible things about technology. One of the great things is that anything that ever happens, people have their phones and video it and immediately put it on Twitter. So
I don't need intel. I got the 360 in the various vines and
right. I mean, it's remarkable. So basically what happens is he's sitting there.
He's dressed in a suit jacket and a white shirt.
He looks great.
Yeah. He does. He's the oak.
He
oak tree.
He looks thinner. than when he played.
He looks great.
Looks great.
It's possible he's out of his mind, but he looks great.
So, like, there's a conversation. You can't tell. I don't know what James Dolan looks like, so I can't tell how close he's sitting to James Dolan, but allegedly he's sitting close to Knicks owner James Dolan. There's a bunch of security guys. When the videos I've seen start, there's a bunch of security guys talking to him. He gets up, and they're talking, and you're thinking, well, this is where some people are paying attention, but people around him are not necessarily. The game is going on.
Doesn't appear contentious.
No, I mean, it looks like a conversation. Then all of a sudden, he shoves.
Well, he puts a hand in the face and of it, one of them first. And then,
get off me.
And then shoves twice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it now at that point, everyone is watching this. And the reporting on it is not clear to me. The Knicks statement, first of all, they handcuff him and they take him out and they arrest him.
Yeah.
And Phil Jackson
takes some guts because he's a much smaller... The guy's getting around him a much smaller than Charles Oakley.
He's enormous. Yes.
And he's also Charles Oakley. Like, would you want to fight that guy?
No. Nobody looks eager to have that
conversation. So he, apparently in the tunnel, after they have handcuffed him, Phil Jackson, who's not doing anything, he comes down and just to calm him down. And Oakley is, like, out of his mind. And to me, the most amazing thing is the statement the Knicks put out, which is the biggest troll move of all time.
Yeah.
They say, like, Charles Oakley was, you know, in an agitated state. We hope he gets the help he clearly needs. I mean, that is such the circumstances are not entirely clear.
Tweet is this from the New York Knicks PR. Charles Oakley came to the game tonight and behaved in a highly inappropriate and completely abusive manner. He has been ejected and is currently being arrested by the NYPD. He was a great Nick, and we hope he gets some help soon.
I mean, that is brutal because the circumstances are not entirely clear.
Is he yelling at James Dolan?
He says,
that's the Knicks' contention.
Interviewed after he's arrested, he says, I didn't speak to him. Now, they have a contentious relationship. They no longer comp him tickets, the Knicks, because he's been so critical of
Dickerson treatment.
He said he bought the ticket.
He can.
And sat in like 3 minutes later. He said he was there for 4 minutes. 3 minutes later, they come
up
and
take him
out. We have
a SeatGeek ad. Maybe he'd bought him out of SeatGeek.
Exactly. So there is much back and forth over it. But, I mean, the Knicks statement makes it sound like he has some mental problem that he needs to address. I mean,
is there anything more discouraging in sports right now than the Knicks situation? This is... If this happens anywhere else, it's a curiosity. The fact that it happens with the Knicks and Phil Jackson gets involved. I'm sure Carmelo will have a statement at some point about this. They are the most dysfunctional. They're the worst team. Phil Jackson hates Carmelo Anthony, which never explains why he signed Carmelo Anthony when he didn't have to. The Knicks are 6-19 in their last 25. Carmelo needs to be traded. Phil Jackson needs to leave. He needs to go back to Los Angeles. It's every day, it's a terrifying circus. This is, if you are a New Yorker, you will understand what I'm saying. This is when, in the early days of George Steinbrenner, this is what the Yankees were like with Billy Martin and Reggie Jackson, things like that. Because these are not, Phil Jackson and Carmelo Anthony are not inconsequential figures. This is not a guy at the end of the bench. This is the best player that they have, the most expensive player that they have. And Phil Jackson was brought in at enormous money, like $12 million a year, to fashion the team, and the team stinks.
It gets worse
every day that he's there. He has to have responsibility for this.
Phil Jackson, I'm speaking of, does not appear like fully engaged even.
What's the job?
I didn't say this about the Oakley thing. If I'm one of those security guards,
I'm afraid of Oakley.
Man, I told Chris before, it's like the only thing going through my mind is that fight he had with Xavier McDaniel, maybe 1985, 86.
Remember that?
YouTube that one up. I'm like, I don't want to go anywhere near that dude.
Oh, well, you can see it in their faces. They're just like, I'm sorry, Charles. Can you just please come
with me? Mr. Oakley?
They were trying, you know. And
I would not have wanted to be a security guard and somebody said, get over there and get him out of here.
I don't think I'm exaggerating. I don't have it up in front of me now, but there's five or six of them around him.
At least.
And he is... And he is not the least bit. Ready to go.
He's bigger by far.
He is ready to go.
He's like 6'9", right? He's huge.
One of them casually puts his hands, like, you know, gently, sort of like near his waist, and that's when...
Don't touch me!
That's what I do when you try to touch me, Nigel. Yeah. Don't you dare put hands on me.
It's really exciting. It's really exciting, isn't it? So it's good. So this will develop as time goes
on. The video is amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's... Oof.
All right, we will come back with Anne Hornaday, and she will review something called John Wick 2 and something called 50 Shades Darker. I have no hope for either of these movies.
Tune in, folks.
I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
All right, I mentioned the SeatGeek ad. We'll do it here. I have no voice for this. I'm sorry. I'll do the best I can. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show that you want to go to. None of those older ticket sites want to change that, but SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. And our feeling here is if Charles Oakley had gotten tickets from SeatGeek, that would just be a remarkable coincidence. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work. You save time and money. SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. Again, if Oakley got tickets out of SeatGeek, they were really good seats.
Got a lot of bang for his buck.
That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. And best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. It's possible that Charles Oakley is availing himself of the $20 rebate and that he listens to the podcast. I'm not saying he does.
We can't rule it out. It's possible that he does.
To get your $20 rebate on tickets, one, you download the SeatGeek app, SeatGeek. You go to the settings tab, you click on add a promo code, then you enter the promo code Tony, T-O-N-Y. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. So if Charles Oakley had done that and he gets his 20, he could hand it over for legal fees, which are going to be very, very high. Download the SeatGeek app and enter the promo code Tony today.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Brandon S. Bowker, singer-songwriter, Lexington, Kentucky, who writes, and we know his work because he's really good. Having previously sent solo singer-songwriter fare, I thought I'd forward a few tracks from past bands of mine, a portion for Ruben and a Parliament of Owls. A Parliament of Owls is fantastic.
Owl Nation.
That's me on vocals, electric guitar, blues harp. And on Ruin, I play everything, including cello and squawky fiddle. Hope they work for you.
This is the song Ruin, so this is lovely. Brandon on everything.
Beautiful.
It's just lovely. This is like the equivalent of when Paul McCartney went out and did the McCartney album. We are thrilled when people send us their work. Anne Hornaday joins us now, and I apologize, as I apologized earlier in the show, for my terrible throat and my voice and the fact that I'm coughing all the time. So I'll try not to talk that much, and I will ask you about two movies today and then about Hank Azaria, so put the Hank Azaria part in the back of your head. But the first movie is John Wick 2. And I have to tell you that yesterday, I think that John Wick 2 is one of the sponsors of PTI this week, which is possible because we do this. I just coughed, and I hit the cough button.
Full disclosure.
So when I saw it come up, I just said to all the guys who were working camera, this has got to be dreadful, right? This has to be like the worst movie of all time, John Wick 2. And every one of those guys said, no. Did you see John Wick? And I went, no. Why would I see John Wick? And they said, John Wick was really good.
Yes.
And they are anxious for John Wick 2, which I just assumed had to be drivel beyond words. So with that as a preface, I don't know what you thought about John Wick, but tell me what you thought about John Wick and then John Wick 2.
Well, John Wick was kind of the... John Wick came out in 2014, and it was like one of the big... It was like the big surprise of that year in terms of everybody thinking, you know, it's Keanu Reeves, and it was actually one of the directors was the guy who was his stand-in, like his stunt double for Matrix. So it's kind of like it had all the ingredients of like, are you kidding me? And then it just turned out to be this utter surprising, like it's kind of a lunk-headed comic booky action film, but it's smart and funny and
really.
Yeah, and
see, I had it in my mind that it was like the Tom Cruise things, Jack Reacher, and Jack reaches back from the dead.
It is like that, but it's more self-aware than those, and it's got the self-awareness and the humor. That's what made it set it apart.
Keanu Reeves,
and also the fight choreography is actually really, really genuinely beautiful. I mean, But of course, the sequel, it's like, I just feel like the first one, you can't, you know, it's that rebottling lightning problem. I mean, nothing can be as delightfully surprising as John Wick, because that was the whole surprise, was how good it was. And so, you know, that's, for starters, it's just never going to measure up in terms of the surprise factor. And they've made it, I don't know, it's very long. And I found it very tedious, although it still has those elements. It still has that humor. And it has a lot of style. And, like, some of the fight choreography is some of the finest fight choreography I've seen recently. I mean, some of the action and fight sequences are just beautiful. And I don't want to spoil them, but there are a couple here that really just, you know, they were lovely. And so, you know, for people who were into that genre, you know, that action genre, and I mean, it's not based on a comic book, but it looks like it could have been based on a comic book or a graphic novel. I mean, it has that kind of pulpy, poppy sensibility. You know, I think if I were to guess, I would say that the fans will like it. I thought it should have been tightened up a little bit.
So should I go see John Wick?
I don't know, Tony. I mean, this is where I still feel like I don't know your taste 100%. So this is one of those films where, I don't know, like, do you like genre movies like that? Are you a genre fan?
Does it have a talking monkey?
No.
He likes it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean...
Well, I mean, what they do now, the one thing I remember from the ad on the paper, not in the paper, on TV, was somebody says, and it's probably Samuel L. Jackson, who is in every movie ever made.
What's in your wallet?
Yeah. And it says, someone get this man a gun. And I just thought, really?
We talk about that every day on the show.
Really? Is Samuel Jackson in this movie?
It's not Sam Jackson. It's Lawrence Fishburne, actually, which is a funny little in-joke, you know, for Matrix,
Matrix
fans.
See, Keanu Reeves, The Matrix, he made a lot of money. I mean, nobody said he was a great actor. He's in Speed. That was a very good movie.
Sure.
But I can't think of anything in the last 10 years with the name Keanu Reeves, except that movie with Key and Peele where the cat was named Keanu.
I know, which is pretty great.
Yeah.
I mean, like I was talking to my colleague Cindy Fuchs at the screening the other night about how, you know, and I'm actually working, and this is why I'm interested in your conversation with Hank Azaria yesterday, because I honestly think the biggest stumbling block for Keanu Reeves, who will always have a place in my heart for a documentary he did a few years ago called Side by Side about digital photography and cinematography.
I thought for sure Anne was going to say he'll always have a place in my heart because of Point Break, but she didn't.
That's true too.
That's why he has always a place in my heart.
That's actually true. That's another fine genre exercise, by the way. But you know what I think has always gotten in his way is his voice. He's got that kind of
dumb-sounding
voice.
Oh, really?
I really feel like it's been a stumbling block, and people haven't taken him seriously.
Hasn't somebody told him
bad
to say the sentence, twer, what's that sentence?
Twer that it were so simple.
Yeah, to just say, right, from Hail Caesar.
Twer that it were so simple.
Such a great
Which wristwatches are Swiss wristwatches?
Well, no, it's like when he gets on Point Break, when you talk about it, and forgive this poor American accent. I'm an FBI agent, Bodie. I mean, it's like, you can't take him seriously.
You know, you really don't do that accent.
No, I don't. I'm sorry.
Stick to the British.
So let's move to another movie. And the other movie, I am totally confident is a joke.
Yeah.
And this is 50 Shades Darker. I want to know, is it the same people? Wasn't the first one sort of a bust? And the most important question I have is this. If you keep doing these movies, will you ever get work in any other movie?
Well, I mean, I think, the first one, it's interesting. You know, it's based on this fanfic, you know, huge hit novel, was just, I don't know if you've ever, like, opened it.
No,
it's so
I haven't.
Dreadfully, I mean, the writing is just, it'll just make your head
come off. We sold 20 million copies.
I know, but here we are, you know.
Yeah.
This is the state of our culture, where something that's just so poorly written can be such a huge hit because of the...
Thank God, that's my
career.
Because
of the concept. So, but I actually found some things to value in the first film, one of which was Dakota Johnson, who's, of course, the daughter of Melanie Griffith and Don Johnson. Her character was actually kind of interesting. You know, I mean, they gave her some interesting contours, and she was a little bit skeptical of the whole thing, and she was smart, and, you know, which I'm sure comes from the novels themselves, too. But anyway, I just felt like there was something going for her in that, you know, that kept me watching, other than just the soft porn, you know, the main event. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's just it was probably the most boring. I mean, this is another overlong. It's almost 2 hours long. It is just a slog. To my mind, I don't think these two people have any chemistry whatsoever. It's Dakota Johnson and Jamie Dornan. I don't know.
Now, if it was Dakota Johnson
and
Jamie Dimon, that would be good.
That'd be interesting.
That would be an interesting thing right there. But Jamie Dornan, I'm not familiar with.
Moyer. I'm not exactly sure who he is either. But
you know, my question is, if you keep doing these things.
Oh, right, your question.
Do you ever get work in any other area?
I think I don't know about him. She will. And she was actually speaking of Ralph Fiennes, she was in a wonderful movie, one of my favorite movies last year, A Bigger Splash. That's another one I want to put on your list.
I don't know that at all.
Now that we've gotten you in front of Hell or High Water, I would like to put you in front of A Bigger Splash, please.
Loved Hell or High Water. All right, so let me move on to something
else,
which is because this stinks. It's a bad movie, obviously.
Yeah.
Hank Azaria was on yesterday.
Delightful.
Unbelievably wonderful to listen to. What do you like? Because you have to see, and you like, there's a lot of animated movies I think you like because you judge animated movies against other animated movies, I suspect. What do you make of the acting that goes into that?
Well, it's funny you should ask because I've been thinking, you know, the Keanu thing actually made me think a lot about voice and how important it is. And Samuel Jackson delivers, to my mind, one of the finest vocal performances of this year, any year, in this narration he did for a documentary called I Am Not Your Negro about James Baldwin, which we haven't gotten a chance to talk about. He reads Baldwin's words, and so he's reading the words, not doing an imitation or a performance of Baldwin, but just reading them as a... It's almost as an interior voice, and it's a performance. I mean, it's a great acting performance. And it's like, I didn't know who it was during the whole movie. I mean, it's not Sam Jackson doing Sam Jackson, you know, the go to F to sleep Sam Jackson.
Yeah.
So I loved what Azaria said yesterday about how it is a performance and how they really, you do have to put yourself physically into it. And if you're not doing that, then it's not going to work. I just thought that was an absolutely fascinating insight. And that Ralph, you know, and that scene from that Ralph Fiennes scene from Hail Caesar gets to that too. That was a beautiful vocal. And I think we've kind of lost that. I mean, you know, you look back at kind of the great voices of cinema like Katharine Hepburn or, you know, Humphrey Bogart or Cary Grant, you know, like there was a golden age when that kind of stylized. Well, and look at Mary Tyler Moore, the dearly departed, you know. Carl Reiner said he hired her because of the ping in her voice. She had a great voice. But with the onslaught of the method and mumblecore and realism and naturalism, I feel like we've kind of lost some of the great voices.
Are there people out there now that when you see them, he or she, see them act, and you hear their voices, and they vary their voices at various times, that you go, they're really good. They're bringing something to this character that I did not expect.
Well, you know who's done that most recently for me was Denzel in Fences. I mean, that's another great vocal performance. I think he actually modulates his voice. And you know, that's why you have to keep going back to Meryl Streep. You know, I mean, she has command of that aspect of her instrument unlike any other. And I also wonder if that is not why people always ask, like, why are the Brits, you know, why do we have so many Brits in our movies and especially our comic book movies? And I feel like that might be why, like, just technically they might be in more command of that aspect of the art form. Because, you know, like, look at Dakota Johnson. I mean, she's got this kind of breathy thing going with her voice. I don't know where she can go with it. I don't know. I just don't know if it's as emphasized in the American Academy, you know, as it is elsewhere.
So,
and it
to
should
that
be,
point,
it's a wonderful aspect of the craft.
To that point, I was reading in the paper today about actors who, you know, didn't come from a lot of money and wondering if they could break into acting and so on and so forth. And it turns out that the kid in The Night Of is British. I had no idea.
We're all English.
I had no idea. Yeah.
Yes.
I didn't know that?
No.
I didn't know Idris Elba for...
No.
I
had no idea.
Right.
I mean, he didn't...
I'm going to break your heart right now. Gene Hackman, British.
No, he's not.
The opposite happened with me when the first time I saw Billy Crudup, I saw him in a play, in a Tom Stoppard play in New York, and he was playing a British guy. And I had the same reaction when I found out he was American. I was just convinced he was British. I mean, I just was like totally shocked when I found out he was born in, I don't know, I think it was North Carolina or something like that. But yeah, so it's a great, it's a great and often overlooked part of performance that, you know, I think those of us who are the professional, you know, who see a lot of it, you know, when you're evaluating a screen performance, that's a huge part of it.
Thank you, Anne. Pleasure. Sorry my
it's
throat is
bad. Pleasure
bent.
For me.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
When we come back, we will have news. And if I last, we'll do a whole show. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? Posting your job in one place isn't enough to find qualified and quality candidates. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all the top job sites, and now you can. With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post your job to 200-plus job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Find candidates in any city or industry nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll in to ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 100 companies and thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. And right now, my listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Tony. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/Tony.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
The name of the song is Planet Nine. It is played by the band La Buena Muerta, which I believe means the good death in Spanish. It is sent to us by Jesse Carbajal in Los Angeles, who owns a record company.
Oh, he's got a label. As
he's
he
got
said.
His own label?
Yes. And this is one of the bands on his label, as he said.
Cool.
Or she. I like I'm it. Assuming Jesse is a he.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yes. La Buena Muerta, is that a possible name for Chad's?
No.
Oh.
No. No, there's zero chance on that.
So we've settled on Shinebox.
Michael, tell the people if they want to send music in, how they do it.
They can send it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
My voice is shot, so tell the people if they want to buy gear. And you know what we ought to sell? Cough syrup.
Cough syrup.
Yeah, or lozenges.
We've talked about that
TK for lozenges. Years.
If yes. people want to buy gear.
They can go to shop.tonykornheisershow.com and check out those new tumblers.
Tumblers are
Ooh,
fabulous.
Tumblers are great.
All right, so Nigel has the news.
Yes, indeed, I do, Mr. Tony. And we talked about the other day that hopefully there's not some sort of hangover from the loss to the Cavaliers from the Wizards
right.
as they went to Brooklyn to take Oof. On the utterly pathetic Nets.
Wilbon, speaking of TaylorMade M1 drivers, Wilbon.
Wait, I don't.
Wilbon said
us.
Yesterday this was a trap game, and he predicted the Nets would beat the Wizards.
Well,
and he came really close.
They came close, yes. The Wizards do end up winning that game 114-110 in overtime. Brooklyn tied it up late, but in overtime, as I said, they were able to escape with a win and avoid a very embarrassing loss.
The Brooklyn Nets are terrible. They're 9-44.
Hard
They're
trying.
They're 10 straight,
though.
I believe, now.
They
yes.
are hard trying.
Yes.
Did you see, just by way of information, Bradley Beal, who continues to be healthy, had 31 points.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
John Wall had 23 points and 12 assists. Can you read the Kelly Oubre Jr. line? Ooh. He started the game because Markieff Morris was out. This is
Keith.
This is a line almost worthy of, who was that, the Georgetown guy?
Otto Porter Jr.?
No. Boutros Ghali.
Oh, Ruben Boomche Boomche.
Yeah, yes. This is almost worthy of that. Go ahead. Gary?
33 minutes, 0 for 5 from the floor, 0 yeah. for 3 from 3 points, 0 for 2 from the line, one offensive rebound and two defensive rebounds.
0 points, 0 assists.
Zero assists.
Three boards,
one
steal,
one turnover. Turnover.
He played 33 minutes?
Yeah.
33 minutes.
Yeah.
0 points.
Yeah. It's really not very
Zero
good,
assists.
Is it?
You know, watching this game last night, and Beal, Wall, and Porter combined for 74 after 88 the previous night.
Yeah,
and
that's
and
good.
Buck and Chenier were talking about them as sort of the new big three, hearkening back on for the Wizards.
Oh, okay. Because thank God.
Hearkening back right. on the days of Gilbert and Caron Butler and Jameson. But I never got a sufficient explanation for what the heck was going on that, like, the day Otto Porter got here, Randy Whitman did that stuff about the player. You know, he went like full Belichick and the player. Like, what was that about? I never understood that.
He hated him, and as a result of that, Otto Porter clearly never felt
comfortable. I guess he didn't want to. If I'm asking the question more specifically, why did he hate him?
I don't know.
Because the guy is,
by all... Did he maybe not want him?
I assume he didn't want him and thought that they were... Remember, Otto Porter was... Had a really good tournament that year. Yeah, it was fun. Georgetown was in the tournament. Had a really good tournament that year, and then afterward, his draft stock soared. I mean, he was talked about like maybe a late lottery pick. Then suddenly, it was like he's going to be in the top five. And then he went three, which you know seems a little bit. For what I saw of him at Georgetown was much higher than he probably should have got. So
and I think there was local pressure to draft him.
My guess is they didn't. He didn't. Whitman didn't want.
Well, for those
because Otto
who
Porter
weren't
is,
paying
by all
attention,
accounts, a really nice.
Now he's doing very well.
This cannot be overstated, though. I mean, the coach absolutely hated him before he had even seen him, before he'd even met him.
Yes,
he'd done nothing, and he's turned into quite a player.
It wasn't quite on the Parcells, you know, level of she needs to get on the court or something like that.
Terry
but
Glenn.
Joey Galloway
was in.
I thought it was Terry Glenn.
Joey Galloway, who, by the way, is a really good analyst on TV. He's
Didn't Otto have a double-double last night? Like
20 and 10.
You know who didn't?
Kelly Oubre.
Yeah, he didn't.
What about
Saturansky? Another interesting fact. Gortat, 14 and 14, his 30th double-double. The Wizards, the only team in the NBA with two players to have 30 double-doubles this year. Wall has had 32 of them. No other team has two players who have had 30 double-doubles this season.
Really? The Golden State Warriors don't have that?
Correct.
Wow. Okay. All right. What else you got?
Interesting into the game last night between VCU and GW.
What happened with that?
So GW, well, okay, first of all, VCU had a chance to ice the game. They're up 52-50 when Jaquan Lewis went to the free throw line for 1-1. He missed it. So then GW comes down. Utah Watanabe hits a three-pointer with 0.4 seconds
right
left.
Right side.
Boom, corner. Ball game.
Ball game. Then on the subsequent inbounds play, Lewis draws a charging foul, goes to the line, and makes both free throws and wins. And VCU wins the game 54.
Have you seen the play?
Every high school team has this play.
No. Yes.
They stick a guy out there on the baseline, and the guy with the ball runs
the inbounder
runs the court a little bit, and then the defender is blindsided.
Crashes into him
and gets the foul.
They do. I mean, we had that play in my high school.
It's the rule. It's the rule. What else?
Also interesting game last night.
We'll be the judge of that.
St. Louis, the Billikens at St. Bonaventure. What's the nickname for St. Bonaventure?
The St. Bonaventures are the Bonnies.
The Bonnies?
Mm-hmm. They're the Bonnies.
So it was the Billikens.
They get it done.
There was the Billikens
of St. Louis.
Yes, the Billikens and the Bonnies.
The Billikens and the Bonnies, two saints.
The Bonnikens.
Yes. The Billikens end up losing 70-55. And so that's not exactly a happy ending for them. And they, we'll just get on a bus and we'll go home. Except for one thing.
Wait. St. Louis is going to get on a bus from Olean, New York,
well,
and
to go to the airport, maybe.
You would assume. I mean, that's a
long
bus ride.
That is? It's days.
Yeah.
It's days. Olean, New
York
is the
far westernpart.
This
newscast is breaking down.
Yeah.
Well,
geographic problems. He's not familiar with our country's land.
Your country's so big.
He usually just takes a bullet
walk
train
across
to Paris.
In an hour.
Yeah, exactly.
They're getting on a bus to go somewhere.
Going somewhere. Let's just leave it at that, okay?
Maybe a casino.
Maybe a casino. The problem was, the bus wasn't there, as they found out that their 56-year-old female bus driver had taken the bus 45 miles away to Randolph, New York, where she was arrested on charge of DWI.
That's really what you want in a bus.
Only 11 hours, Tone.
Yeah.
St. Bonaventure to St.
There's
Louis.
No chance they drive that, though.
That's all?
Yeah. 744 miles.
They don't drive that.
Why not? It's college.
Oh.
It's possible. It's
D1 school, they're not driving.
I would assume they fly that.
Well, we'll see. What
first class, I would hope.
Steph Curry made some comments in response to one of his big, I guess, would he be a sponsor? I guess his partnership with Under Armour, Kevin Plank.
He's one of the biggest guys in Under Armour.
Yes.
Jordan Spieth.
Certainly the biggest basketball
Steph Curry.
Guy.
Yeah,
and
I think
huge coup because they got him before he became a giant star.
And there's a wonderful story that talks about the Nike pitch. To Steph
Curry.
Had the
wrong name.
Right, they had the wrong name. They really sort of, you know, just went through the motions with him, and then they just, you know, whiffed on a chance to get a superstar like him. And I read somewhere that he's worth $200 million worth of business to Under Armour. which isn't a shock to anybody.
Steph Curry is the only basketball player who's truly talented and sort of a beyond reproach as a player who looks like he could live on your block.
Right.
He's the only one.
Right. Other than LeBron, he's the only one my kids know.
Right, and everybody else is so big.
Yeah.
And Steph Curry, he's a gold mine. He's a great get. He's a great get.
He's thought well spoke. I mean, he's a great spokesman for a brand, yeah, too. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's a bit of a kerfuffle because I guess Kevin Plank had referred to President Donald Trump as an asset to the United States.
Yeah.
And when asked about it, Curry said, yeah, I agree with that if you just remove the ET from asset.
And you know what? That's perfectly permissible. Everybody's got the right to do that. There's also consequences for your behavior.
That's right.
And I imagine they'll be talking to each other.
Yes.
On a one-on-one basis about that. Because that's an embarrassment,
yes,
obviously. But Steph Curry is not. There are a lot of athletes who have come out and said, we won't even go to the White House.
Yes,
it's invited, we won't even go.
It's
not the first time. I remember there were a sufficient amount of golfers who did not want to visit the Clinton White House. And the golfer's position is so wacky. It's like
too many taxes.
We shouldn't be taxed.
Yeah, we're not.
Because we don't have contracts. Yeah. We have no guaranteed contracts. So why are you taxing us? And you want to say, what planet,
Tony,
do you live on?
The golden boy, Tom Brady, didn't go in 2015.
That's right. Tim Thomas didn't want to see Obama.
Right.
I mean, this isn't the first time that athletes are saying this and doing this. It's not.
So. I do think the NBA's approach on their players, I know you're not a giant Adam Silver fan, but I do think their approach on their players as it relates to speaking out in politics is interesting, particularly when contrasted with the NFL, where, you know, Goodell, they run that thing like a top-down organization.
But you've had at least two Patriots say that they're not going to go.
But I just think
the third, James White, is going to decide if it happens.
Yes. Silver is much more, and I don't know if it's him or the owner, but he's allowed them to speak out much more. A lot more NBA players have spoken out, even with all the Black Lives Matter stuff.
Like, I would tell you
it's a more socially conscious. They allow them to be more socially conscious.
I would
than
tell
the
you
NFL.
That is a very good spin on it, and that's the spin they want you to have. I would also say to you that the difference between the NFL and the NBA is that in one sport, in the NFL, the commissioner is completely and totally on the side of the owners.
Yeah.
And the other sport, in the NBA, Adam Silver is completely and totally on the side of the players,
yep,
to the point of giving them a week off.
That's right.
In the middle of the season, which doesn't prevent LeBron from taking two more weeks off later in the season, to go to Miami. So, anyway.
Yeah.
You have a big story. You've waited days for this.
Yes, this is we specifically waited for you to come in studio, Chris.
Oh.
This comes to us from the town of Injambakam in the South Indian state of Tamil Nadu, rather.
I understand why you waited for me.
A woman was asleep in the middle of the night and woke up with a tingling, crawling sensation right around her right nostril. She thought she might be catching...
Look at his face. He's
so disturbed. Right. Thought she might
be
catching a cold.
Is this some kind of disease that I'm going to worry about having?
No. Thought she might be catching a cold.
Not a disease. I always worry about catching a cold.
But then she felt something move. She spent the rest of the night in discomfort waiting for the sun to come up so she could go to the hospital. So,
and the sun will come up tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
Bet your bottom dollar that tomorrow there'll be sun.
Thank you, Annie. So she grabbed her son-in-law and said, we got to go to the hospital. They went to this one place and they said, no, we can't figure it out. You might be suffering from some sort of nasal growth. They were sent her to another place. Hospital said,
new nose.
Right.
Growing inside your old nose.
How many hospitals are in the Tamil district?
Apparently the fourth one was the charm at the Stanley Medical College Hospital. They used an endoscope to find out what was actually going on in there. And she was in significant amount of pain and distress. They found that a cockroach had crawled up her nose and was in a cavity in her skull between her eyes and her nose and was still alive. And they were like, we have to get it out because if it dies in there, it's going to rot and then it's going to get infected. Look at Slither.
Chris is leaving the studio.
I mean, another thing to worry about. Disgusting.
It is.
So
when he told me the story the other day, I said, I can't stand this story.
They used a suction device.
Why do you have a cavity up there?
They used a suction device to remove the cockroach, but it took 45 minutes using suction and forceps. They finally were able to get the bug out, still alive. They put it in a jar, the wings went out, and it was flapping around in the jar.
And it's because it's game worn. It could go for $500,000.
Right.
Yes. So, but
this is the other great Wilbon thing
that
yesterday.
Is so
Wilbon,
speaking
you know, we
of
were
M1
talking
drivers.
About that driver just now. Yeah.
This is the other great Wilbon thing. Is on the air. Wilbon just completely dismisses the notion that Brady's game-worn jersey in the greatest football game ever played, to become the first quarterback to ever win five Super Bowls,
right. mm-hmm.
that comeback. Wilbon dismisses the notion that that jersey could be worth $500,000.
Oh, I think it could be worth way more.
He says,
than
"No,
that.
No, no, stop it, stop it. Nobody would pay $50,000 for it." What do you?
Do you see the Texas Rangers, not the baseball team, but the actual?
Did they find it?
No, no. They're on the case though.
No.
Lieutenant Governor of the state, Dan Patrick, not that Dan Patrick, put out a thing that says we take crime very seriously in Texas, and we will find the jersey.
So anyway, all right, are we done?
We are.
Okay, great.
The woman's fine, by the way.
That's, you know what? That's great to know.
Not yes. really.
We will come back with what? We will come back with Abby Lowell,
that's
an
right.
old guy, Abby
Radio.
Lowell,
yes.
who's going to talk to us about two things, the new Supreme Court nominee and the notion of this travel ban, whether it's legal or not, and what the arguments are on both sides. Okay? I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Harry's ad, and again, my voice is not very good today. Everybody knows that everybody in here has the Harry's product.
That's how you know
Harry's
it's a live
razors.
Read.
Yeah, so, you know, and
would
we
he
like
sound
them.
Like this if it wasn't live?
I just, it's,
tape this in
you
July.
Know, I'm doing the best
the
I can.
The foresight it would require to record one in this voice.
I'm not Hank Azaria. I can't do it. For decades, one big razor company has relentlessly increased prices and reaped immense profits at the expense of their customers. So Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own factory. And by taking less profit and selling directly to you over the internet, Harry's offers their blades at half the price, just $2 a blade, as compared to the $4 or more you will pay at a drugstore. Harry's razors include everything you need for a close and comfortable shave. They're weighted, they have a weighted ergonomic, I was going to say economic, a weighted ergonomic handle. Mine, as I always say, is an orange. Five precision layered and engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade. Rich lathering shave gel. And I think I said this the other day, it really smells good. That smells good.
It does.
And a travel blade cover. Harry's is so confident in the quality of their blades, they want you to try their shave set for free. You heard that right. Just cover the shipping when you sign up. Plus, as a special offer, fans of this show can go to harrys.com, HARRYS.com right now. They enter the code TONYK at checkout to get a post-shave bomb, BALM, also free. That is harrys.com, and the code is TONYK.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is Old Guy Radio for the day. This is Carole King, who was born Carole Klein, who went to the Brill Building and wrote about 10,000 great songs and then recorded her own album, Tapestry, in 1970 or so after writing for people for 10 or 15 years. And at the time, it became the largest selling album in the world. She turned 75 today. In terms of critical commentary, she's simply great. Okay, she's simply great. And on a tour with James Taylor some years back that has special resonance in my life having to do with my son and daughter-in-law, they did this song today, You've Got a Friend. That was one of the big songs that they did. She's got, I mean, her style of singing, she's not a great singer, but the songs that she writes for others, when she does them herself, they're so different. They're just great. And, you know, I know she performs. I think early on she like left Manhattan and left the hustle bustle and went to Aspen, Colorado and has lived there for like 50 years or something like that. I'm not sure. Anyway, she's great. That's critical commentary. The smartest man in Washington, Abby Lowell, joins us now. And there are two issues to talk about. I don't know how long either will take, but we're a podcast, so it doesn't really matter. The most important one in the short term is not the most important one in the long term. The long term most important one is a Supreme Court nominee, a 49-year-old guy who could be there for 25 years easily. But the most important one in the short term is what has come to be known as the travel ban. And Abby, I'm not certain. I mean, as we tape this, I don't know if that's been decided and it's going to be released. But as we tape this, it has not yet been decided by, a three-judge panel on appeal. Can you give us both, Abby, the case for the travel ban as people in the administration will make it and against the travel ban?
Sure.
And you're right, it hasn't been decided, although I really think it gets decided today, if Thursday, and you know, tomorrow, maybe.
It should be. It's important. They should, with all deliberate haste, they should do it.
They did it on an expedited basis.
What time is Hot Bench on today?
Hot Bench. It should be decided on Hot Bench. But all right, go ahead.
It could be. Or we could get Judge Judy just to cut through it and decide for herself. It would be a lot quicker. So here is the arguments that the Trump administration made and would make about it. First, they would say that in matters of national security, the executive branch power of the president is its maximum, and the ability of other branches to second-guess or to limit it is at its minimum. They would say that that's especially true when the reach of an order is outside territorial United States as opposed to at the actual presence at the border in the United States. And they would say that against those two criteria, the various aspects of the ban, meaning can you pick certain countries, can you make an exclusion for a minority religion clause in those countries, can you decide on a piecemeal basis whether it is or is not across the board of whether it is a visa or a green card, has the most power of the president and the least power of another branch.
Okay.
That's their argument. The challengers would say the following, that all the protections of the Bill of Rights apply to anybody who touches the United States the moment that they touch, and therefore it's not an outside the U.S. entity, and that's because the Bill of Rights talks about a word called person and not citizen. They would say that you can't justify certain classifications of persons against Bill of Rights rights. For example, you can't distinguish among religions because that is one of the classes the Supreme Court has said is what we call a suspect class and gets the highest scrutiny when somebody distinguishes on the basis of gender or race or ethnicity or religion. And they would also say that the ban is irrational on a standard of looking for rational behavior of executive branch agencies because it says Yemen or it says Iraq, and those countries have not produced people who have blown up things in the United States, and exclude Saudi Arabia and other countries where people have. And so they say it's overbroad, and it discriminates on the basis of religion, and its fundamental distinguishing among various countries is irrational.
Okay, so
in a sense, that's what it is.
So the setup would be, if you were for it, you would say, this is a matter of national security, which takes precedent over everything else. And if you're against it, you would say, no, that's not how it works. We are the United States of America, and this is the spine of our country, right? Do I have that in essence?
I think you have it right, with sort of one more gloss on each side of the equation. Even in the most declared war situation, as we know from Japanese internment camps, etc., the Supreme Court has ruled that the executive branch's power isn't completely infinite. And where that line is across the board is what courts decide, notwithstanding the president, who believes that courts should not debate these issues, apparently.
Okay. Does the composition or the geography of the court that is hearing this matter?
Of course it does, in ways that are both more obvious and more subtle than most people in the United States give credit for. It's not that judges are Democrat or Republican or necessarily pro a particular president or against. But when a Republican conservative president picks a judge who meets whatever the criteria he has picked, then he is picking somebody who has the philosophy of how much power the executive branch should have versus how much the Congress should have versus how much the judiciary should have. So it matters that this particular panel had two judges appointed by Democratic presidents with the idea of that balance versus the one Republican who, if you were listening to the argument, was seeming to ask the questions that were most difficult for those challenging the ban. So it's never one-to-one. We think it is. You know, we think, oh, well, you know, Bush appointed the judge, and therefore it will be a pro-president, pro-Bush judge. Not quite. But it does reflect both philosophy. And the geography matters in the sense that, at least the way it has grown up, the federal court that's in the west part of the United States, states of Washington, Oregon, California, and what is called the Ninth Judicial Circuit in the federal appeals, is deemed to be, and because of its having longstanding democratically appointed judges, more liberal. And by liberal, I mean those that will put more emphasis on the Bill of Rights versus executive power.
Okay, so let me ask then the obvious question, and I could be dead wrong on this. When the NFL Players Association wants to challenge something against them, they almost always go to this court in Minnesota where Judge Doty is, D-O-T-Y, because he has ruled for them before. Did the Trump administration pick this court to go to on appeal, or was that set in stone because of where the initial ban took place?
It's actually the opposite side of that coin. Those who wanted to challenge the ban figured out a place that I believe they thought had the most likelihood of challenging the ban's reach and breadth and distinctions. And again, traditionally speaking, that would be courts in the Ninth Circuit. And so once the challenge was brought in a federal district court in the state of Washington, where it was going to get appealed was automatically set by the way the jurisdiction of geography works. And that's why it's in the Ninth Circuit, it seems, no matter what. I mean, this is a case that's going to head to Washington, D.C., down the street at the Supreme Court.
So, yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. Is that where, you know, do you think that it just bounces and bounces and bounces until the Supreme Court, which only has at the moment eight justices, that they get it?
Well, it bounces in the following way. So people need to understand that what is up for grabs right now is at a preliminary stage called an injunction. Everybody kind of knows that.
Yeah.
But what has been enjoined is the implementation of the entire regulation. In the first day, what was being stopped was the distinction, for example, between people with green cards and people with travel visas.
Right.
So right now there is a nationwide ban to implement the entire order. And what is being debated is not absolute merits as to whether it is or is not legal, but at a very preliminary basis, on an injunction level, here's what a challenger has to show. A challenger has to show what is called a high likelihood of success on the merits if it ever should get to the ultimate decision, and it has to show irreparable harm that could not be satisfied if you let it play out until the end. So normally in a contract case, if you're debating about money, injunctions don't work because money will ultimately pay whoever wins and you're made whole. In certain things like I can't get my family back into the United States, then irreparable harm is easier to show because you can't delay the relief. So everything gets truncated and everything gets highlighted in the preliminary stage. What the Ninth Circuit is now deciding is whether the district court, the federal trial court, was correct in its decision that an injunction based on that higher standard should issue until the case is heard on the merits. They could take the Ninth Circuit decision on the issue of an injunction up to the Supreme Court, and it still is not the same as when the actual merits of the case gets debated.
Okay. Just as a sort of added bonus here, I mean, judges are human too. When they see the President of the United States attack one as a so-called judge, is there a carryover effect, do you think, on other judges?
I cannot imagine not. I mean, it's one of the, you know, it's one of the mysteries of what we'll get used to in the next 4 years or 3 years, 10 months, 37 days, 16 hours, and 47 seconds.
But who's counting?
But who's counting, right. So it's just mind-boggling that somebody who wants an outcome would say and do things that, because judges are human, and not just human, by the way, I mean, it doesn't matter who's the president. What we have had is a long tradition that we have a tripartite government with checks and balances, and it's a good thing. You know, we may not agree on any given moment, but in general, it's a good thing. And I think the judges are going to react very poorly to what the president said. And look, his nominee, and that might be the segue, but we didn't plan this, ladies and gentlemen, his nominee basically has been quoted as saying he was disheartened and disappointed by the president's statements.
Yeah.
So it will have an impact.
I think he used the word demoralizing, but I don't know. Here's the other question that I have. Did he use these words? What we know is that a senator from Connecticut, a Democratic senator from Connecticut, is saying that this is what Neil Gorsuch said to him. We haven't heard Neil Gorsuch say it, and we've seen the president react very badly to this personally to Blumenthal. Does that matter, Abby? I mean, you know, as a reporter, that would matter to me.
Yeah. Tony, it's going to be interesting today-ish or tomorrow-ish if Judge Gorsuch, either directly or through a spokesperson, addresses the issue of what he said or not.
Yeah.
He hasn't denied it, so I'm not saying it's admitted yet. So I don't know. Will it matter? Let's put it this way. I don't think President Trump, when one says what President Trump is going to do and isn't going to do, that's like trying to determine whether the, you know, groundhog in Pennsylvania will or will not. Who knows? But I doubt he's going to withdraw the nomination if it turns out that Gorsuch really said that he was it was demoralizing or disheartening or whatever he said. That would be an incredibly embarrassing thing to somebody who the president extolled as one of the great jurists of the, you know, the planet age. So I don't know if there are any ramifications. Right. If anything, it's likely to make Gorsuch more confirmable by the United States Senate, who will show some degree of independence.
This is what I wanted to get to. Everything that I read just seems to say, you may not agree with this guy, but he's good. He's solid. You know, there's nothing that jumps out and says, no, you cannot have him on. Do you expect the Democrats? I mean, Chuck Schumer is like, he must be benching, you know, 300 pounds every single morning because he's so chesty about virtually everything at this point. Do you expect the Democrats to go all out to block this guy?
And the answer to the question really has nothing to do with the merits of Judge Gorsuch as much as it does to the Democrats trying to figure out the strategy for the next vacancy.
Yeah, because it's the next one that matters.
Right. So that's what I think they're sitting around when they're not bench-pressing 300 pounds figuring out, because they have to go as follows. Judge Gorsuch, as you said, is a real judge. He's a jurist. You may disagree with him on his decisions, but not for want of his being an ideologue without reason and not because of his background or experience. He's not the guy I would pick to the Supreme Court, but I don't think he's, given that a president has the right to pick somebody in his own image and with his philosophy, he's not off the reservation.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a real guy with a real background, and there's nothing that's absolutely wacko about it. So, I mean, he does have one huge detriment and one disqualification, but I can get over that if the rest of the country can. I mean, he went to the right school for college and then decided to go to this secondary school called Harvard for law school. So for all of us who were Columbia both times,
Columbia.
Yeah, it's not, it, you know, other than that, I can forgive him. Okay. Having said that, I think the whole play here is, okay, the Democrats think as follows. If we throw everything we have against him now, we basically prompt or provoke the Republicans to do away with the rule that requires 60 votes for a Supreme Court justice, as we have done away with that requirement for cabinet and other officials. You want to do that for a Neil Gorsuch, where he is likely not going to change the ideological center? Or do you want to wait until the next time, if there is a next time, and that's when we're going to play that game of roulette? I think that's the play the Democrats are deciding.
Abby, thank you so much. You made it much clearer.
Well, I mean, I know we're in a new era of podcasts and stuff, but is my walk-up music now going to be You Have a Friend from Carole King? And
no, but if you appear in the old guy segment, it varies every single time.
Right,
we'll get walk-up music.
We'll have to work on that.
Thank you. Abby Lowell, boys and girls, the smartest man in Washington. We will take a break. Come back with email and a jingle. I am Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Comes Tony's mailbag, got your email, faxes, and your notes. Here comes Tony's mailbag, gotta read some for all you folks.
The familiar strains of Gary Big Time. But before we get into the mailbag, I want to say thanks to Washington Post movie critic Ann Hornaday and to attorney Abby Lowell for coming on with us. Also want to thank our sponsors today, Harry's Razors, ZipRecruiter, and SeatGeek. Please support them the way they support our podcast. You know, I really shouldn't be reading these things. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show wherever you listen to podcasts, including iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play. And if you listen to the show through iTunes, please leave us a review. So last night...
Please
do.
And make it a good review.
Michael was
not
over
just
for
a
dinner.
Review.
Preferably a positive review.
Elizabeth was over for dinner. Michael was over for dinner. And I didn't sound like this last night.
No, I was surprised
to
hear this when I came in this morning.
Yeah,
annoying was still there.
Annoying, but I'd sound much worse.
I don't think you sound that bad.
What'd you have for dinner?
Yeah.
It was really good.
What'd you have?
We had halibut.
Pan-seared halibut.
You got a lot of cooks in that family.
Elizabeth was cooking. Her friend was Ron was cooking.
Right.
And it was spectacular.
Par-cooked potatoes that were
the
then
potatoes,
pan-fried.
You cannot imagine
fat.
How good these potatoes were that Ron cooked.
Delicious.
You cannot imagine it.
I'll be over at 7.
Getting horizontal hurts. I would suggest maybe just a warm hot water and honey with a little lemon before bed.
Got to have something.
Yeah.
Tony Solabello writes, Ren. Today while working at a golf course here in Florida, I had my first David Aldridge moment. My boss typically keeps the TV on MSNBC in the pro shop during the day. I mean, and I add parenthetically, that's got to be the only pro shop in America where that happens. I come inside for a moment to see Chris Saliza on the TV. I know that guy, I scream out. My boss asks how, and instead of trying to describe a man who had a flip phone until 6 months ago, I just said, it's a long story. Rich from California, Rich Herald. The story of the guy playing guitar with a missing hand was very inspiring. Might it inspire Saliza to talk without a microphone? Just shout at Chris.
I don't get that. You wouldn't be able to hear. Wait a minute.
Steve Miller, Cornelius, North Carolina. The following passage from the book, Saturday the Rabbi Went Hungry, leapt off the page at me. My folks use money, of course, usually in some multiple of 18. My father would accumulate coins for that purpose, dimes, as I recall. As a youngster, I was given 18 pennies. Why 18? In Hebrew, the two letters in the alphabet that represent the numbers 8 and 10 spell chai, which means life. There's as clearly a basis in our faith for this numbers thing. Just to make things more interesting, the main character in the book is Rabbi Small, obviously a little. From Ben Krimmel in Baltimore. I generally dislike when people write in to offer corrections, but I'm going to do it anyway. Jason Lockenfora is wrong. There is a Royal Farms in the state of Maryland where you can get beer with your chicken.
How about that?
The Royal Farms stores at 3635 Keswick Road in Hampton has both beer and wine. And by the way, was ranked the fourth best ROFO for Royal Farms in the Baltimore, by Baltimore Magazine, and should be higher than the number three ROFO, which is also in Hampton and does not have beer. From Don Hammock in Biloxi, Mississippi.
Info for life. You said
any fan of PTI can be on the podcast. I'm a fan of PTI. What time do you want me to call in Friday morning? You can call in Friday because we're taking Friday
off.
Yeah, call in. You can call in.
Host from Friday.
Mark Corriere in Ellicott City, Maryland. Listening to the podcast, I heard you express your desire to be the bailiff on Hot Bench. I have to pose the question to other littles. Am I the only one that immediately had visions of you in a Barney Fife outfit with your one bullet in your shirt pocket? From Douglas Knight in Red Lion, Pennsylvania. Are you interested in getting an email read on the air? Please give a personal example of how you, Mr. Tony, got an email read on the air by Doug Knight. Pay close attention to Doug Knight from Red Lion and follow these steps. One, make a list. Two, reference that you've been a little since the radio commercial internet show, the ESPN Zone, that you came on the radio with Coach Don Shula way back in the day when he first opened his Shula Steakhouse in D.C., but forgot to bring product and was suitably hazed. Three, suggest that Shinebox is building momentum, but also suggest friends as well as We Have a Piano or Three Doctors and a Prof. Four, hang up and listen. That's it. That's the list. That's Doug Knight. From Orlando Rodriguez in Tucson, Arizona, I'm a little behind on the pod, but I was baffled that Gilbert Arenas was not on the ballot for Ben's Chili Bowls mural. This got me thinking, Chad's can be renamed Agent Zero's Party, and a mural of Washington's most famous party can be depicted on a wall during renovation. You can even add a cocktail named Andre Blotch's Shoe in honor of Gilbert. Gilbert Arenas killed the franchise.
I do like the name Hibachi. It's like my favorite nickname of all time.
He gave it to himself.
Yeah, of course. It's still legendary.
John Frakes.
Hibachi's a good
Charlotte, North Carolina. No, it's not. While debating between first class and business class for the new name of the restaurant, you overlooked the most appropriate area of the plane as it pertains to you and your new venture. Baggage. Baggage. No chance. If you're out on your bike tonight, everyone, as always, do wear white.
Tell Gary to bring home bacon.
Will do, George.